Broadcasting live from the Bank 59 studios at the ultimate crossroads of business and community, the Wisconsin State Fair. It's time for the Upswing on WTMJ. Now, in for Jeff Sherman, here's Steve Scafidi.
Yes, I'm in for Jeff Sherman. Happy to have an extra bonus hour. And we are scheduled to be joined by Andy Tarnoff. He's been on the show many times, podcast guest as well. Sort of an unofficial ambassador to the city of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. He's not here yet. So we're going to do a couple things. One, if you're watching the ticker, as they say, on one of the big networks, you're seeing the market, like what happened in Japan yesterday or today, depending on how you look at the clock. Nikkei dropped about 12%, worst day since 1987, which is known as Black Monday for those Wall Street history experts. And NASDAQ suffering, it's like down 3 or 4%, Dow down as well. And I did reach out to Dave Spano, maybe he will join us this hour. If not, we can certainly talk about it. It's an interesting timing of this because, as I said with A.J. Bhaiyappur, who joined us, CBS 58 reporter, who joined us for the first hour of the program, everything is politicized at this point in the race for November, including the market performance. So now we will see the cascade of, well, look at the administration of Biden and Harris. They're responsible. And I would caution people that we give presidents and administrations too much credit and probably too much blame. Doesn't mean they can, you know, wring their hands of this. There's certainly economic policy that matters when you're talking about the performance of the markets. Certainly the policy of the Fed, the decision not to lower interest rates. Anybody who's been paying attention to this story understands how consumers are behaving. Now, I heard the morning show with Eric and Amy Taylor this morning, Eric Bilstead. Vince is off this week. And I was interested in the conversation about how we view this. So, and Eric made a brilliant point. You go out and you're doing stuff. There's people everywhere. They're buying things. They're traveling. They're shopping. They're doing all the things that is suggestive of a great economy, right? What do we hear? Hotels are full. Airlines, busiest days ever. People getting in their cars and driving to vacation spots. All the resort areas full. But, and this is a big but, when you spend money that you don't necessarily have or can afford, i.e. credit card spending, and what do we know about that story? People are spending more money they don't have, financing, they think, through their credit cards, and ultimately that catches up with you, and you have a payment that's much, much bigger than the budget that you have allows you to afford. That becomes a problem. We know that the Fed did not lower interest rates. So I was asking some folks during the break, what do you think the current mortgage rates are? And I think they're in the 7% range. If you've got really great credit, maybe you get in the sixes, or maybe it's higher if you don't have great credit. Given an already very difficult housing market where there's not a lot of stock available, I know in the city of Oak Creek it's hard to find a single-family home. And when there is one, they usually go quickly and for a very high price. So the lack of supply, heavy demand, and the more expensive cost of buying a home, especially if you're financing it, becomes prohibitive. So that's sort of feeding the frenzy of all of this. And we, of course, and AJ made this point in the first hour, we had less than spectacular jobs numbers. I think it was around 114,000 or so. So that number was lower than anticipated. We had a tick up in the unemployment rate. Those are all concerning, worrisome signs from a markets that are looking at everything. Quickly back to the political piece. I guess my suggestion would always be to not overreact. So I tweeted this out this morning. It's a big day for the doom and gloomers because they will obviously seize, this is the political part of this story, people will seize on bad news because it's good news for their party and it's bad news for the current administration. Therefore, they're the problem, they being Biden Harris, and Donald Trump is the answer. Well, perhaps. Economic policy of a president matters, certainly. Donald Trump is not the president right now, and Donald Trump sat through some pretty significant challenges in his administration. We tend to forget. I hear a lot about low gas prices, but I don't hear about the incredibly high amount of federal spending contributing, what is it, $6 trillion or more to the federal deficit. That's sort of ignored in that equation. So I would say pump the brakes on speculation or maybe attribution of bad economic news to one administration or the other. It's bad news. And we all feel the pain, those of us who are in 401ks or have investments, independence of all the rest of our income and revenue. That is a pain that really hurts because it takes time to make those losses up, albeit on paper. All right. After the break, I was going to bring this to you later, but I'm going to bring it to you right now. After the break, I had a chance to sit down with a really, really great first responder who was dealing with some significant brain trauma issues, and two of his docs. And we sat down last week for the podcast, but I wanted to bring in some of that because I want to sort of tease the podcast. But two, I wanted to tell you the story of an Oak Creek firefighter who is part of something called the BRAVE program. And it's a tremendous, tremendous program using unbelievable research and treatments in ways that maybe we haven't done before. So we're going to play a little bit of that. We'll certainly point you to the Scafidiology podcast where it will reside. You can hear the whole conversation. That will be coming up next on 620 WTMJ. We thanks always to Horicon Bank, our great sponsors for this upswing hour. We're broadcasting live from the Bank 5-9 studios at the Wisconsin State Fair. We have a great conversation today, and this is one of those important conversations that I like to do, whether it's the podcast or the show, Political Power Hour. I want to talk about things that matter to people, and this is one that matters when we're talking about traumatic brain injury. Got some great guests today. Joining us on the podcast, Dr. Kirpad, say hi.
Hi.
Good to have you in studio. Dr. Michael McCray, hello.
Good morning.
And our patient guest, and I use that in sort of two ways because you've been very patient, Colin Crawford, who has been through something called the BRAVE program. I'll start with you, Dr. McCray. Tell us about the BRAIN program, and specifically when we're talking about traumatic brain injury, which I think a lot of people are sort of aware of that issue and that concern, but explain it for people in a easy-to-understand manner and why the patient here is getting some treatment that maybe is new and innovative that didn't happen before.
Thank you. Happy to, Steve. So the BRAVE program, which stands for Building Resilience Through Action in Veterans and First Responders.
We all love acronyms, don't
absolutely.
We?
And this program is specifically designed to meet the needs of military veterans who served and our first responders, police, fire, paramedics, and other frontline first responders who are experiencing the long-term effects of traumatic brain injury or concussion. And as you said, there has been an increased awareness around traumatic brain injury, or TBI as we refer to it. Over the past 25 years, we've seen really greater awareness of this injury in sport, and all of us, many of us have kids who participate in contact and collision
sports. The big conversation about parents deciding if their kids should play certain sports.
Correct. And what we see in youth and high school, collegiate, professional sports over the last 20 years has really brought this injury and in the discussion of it to our living rooms, right? We're making decisions about our kids. But we also know that while this is TBI is a major public health problem globally, there are subsets of the population, namely military service members and first responders, who are at significantly heightened risk of TBI and concussion, often repeatedly, just by virtue of their training.
Because
and their
of
work.
The job they do.
Yeah, they put their life on the line every day, either protecting us as our military force or protecting us on a daily basis on our streets here in Milwaukee and around the country.
Colin, you're the star of the show. You're the patient who's sort of gone through this, the BRAVE program. Wisconsin Army National Guard. You're a firefighter paramedic in the Oak Creek Fire Department, which I'm very attuned into since I live in Oak Creek. You were deployed in Iraq. You have had these issues. You are now part of this program. Walk us through the issues that you've dealt with, and then even more specifically and more relevant, how the BRAVE program is impacting your recovery.
Sure. So when I found out about the BRAVE program, you know, I came and I showed up with all of these things that I thought were wrong with me since
Walk us through that. What did that feel like? Yeah. What were you experiencing?
So, you know, my biggest concerns were memory loss, difficulty concentrating, weakness on one side of my body that was still going on. And when I started the program, I started to learn that these were just symptoms of other things that were going on with me. Dr. Burek is a very big proponent of sleep, healthy sleep, getting that deep sleep that you need. And I've learned so much about that. And my quality of life has gotten so much better just in the past 2 weeks that it's unbelievable the person that I am now from 2 weeks ago.
Let's talk about what the Brave program does, why it's unique, and I welcome all of you, Dr. Kerpot or Dr. McCrae, to jump in here. What are we doing that's different and so critically important to these individuals who are suffering from these issues through their work, through their experiences in the military or wherever they had these traumatic brain injuries?
What really distinguishes the Brave program is we provide these services in a fully integrated one-stop shop fashion. So our referrals, our first responders and military veterans come to us from across the nation. This is a national program. They come to us, as Colin said, with a variety of different needs. So the first part of the program is this intensive 2 or 3 day evaluation where we identify the individualized needs of that person. This is not a cookie cutter based treatment program. Then based on that detailed evaluation, comprehensive assessment of neurologic, psychological, and functional health, we design a treatment program for that individual person. They return to us for a 3-week intensive program where they receive interdisciplinary services, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, psychological therapies, neurologic assessment, psychiatric evaluation, sleep assessment, etc., all in one program where the providers are constantly talking to each other and rubbing elbows on a minute-by-minute basis. I think Colin said it best earlier today is, to receive the treatment he received in 2 to 3 weeks in the Brave program would take a person 5 years to find and gain access to.
Is it the one-stop shop that makes that easier to sort of figure out what's going on with that individual?
And a group of providers who are professionally trained
highly
in taking
skilled.
Care of these individuals and highly skilled, and their communication on a constant basis about the individual needs of a patient.
So let's make it more general. Someone's listening to this podcast and they're wondering, okay, so what are some of the symptoms, some of the things I should be aware of that maybe suggest I should look a little closer at what's going on inside my head?
Sure. So I think many of us, roughly 30% of the population, has sustained an acute concussion, fall on the ice, sporting event, etc., where oftentimes those early symptoms are headache, memory difficulties, sleep disturbance. And in many individuals, they follow a course of recovery with rehab or treatment. But we also know there's a sizable subset of veterans, first responders, and people in the general public who go on to have persistent and really lasting symptoms that have a major negative impact on their life function, their ability to work, to go to school, etc. So really it's when those symptoms with a similar profile, cognitive difficulty, decreased energy, dizziness and balance problems, sleep difficulties, depression, anxiety, that persist beyond that normal stage of recovery. And this program, Brave, is really dedicated to serving military service members and veterans who are now out in the chronic phase of their recovery and are having grave difficulty finding access to services to treat their symptoms.
A little bit about the Brave program. Fantastic research done locally on traumatic brain injury, and thanks to my guests. We're going to have the entire conversation up on our Scafidiology podcast page, probably publish that next week, and some really important information for those individuals, first responders, veterans who are dealing with those sorts of injuries years later, chronic traumatic events in their lives that are now giving them significant issues, and I appreciate the wisdom shared there and the willingness of Patient Colin to come on and talk about it. So we'll put that up next week on the Scafidiology podcast. All of our podcasts available wherever you get podcasts or at WTMJ.com. Lots more to get to on the upswing. Don't forget, Andy Tarnoff's going to join us, sort of the unofficial ambassador of Milwaukee. He will join us after the bottom of the hour news. Lots more to do on the upswing right here from the Bank 5-9 studios at the Wisconsin State Fair. The saying goes, no good deed goes unpunished. Well, how about a good deed and then getting rewarded for it? Join the WTMJ Street Team outside of the Bank 5-9 studios at the Wisconsin State Fair. Do a good deed, get a piece of WTMJ swag. Who doesn't like swag? Debbie Lazaga outside the studio here. Thanks for saying hi. It's that easy. Stop by the Bank 5-9 studios at the Wisconsin State Fair and say hey to WTMJ. We are directly across from the Cream Puff Pavilion. We are just north of the Expo Center. We are right next to the Info Center. Folks waving and saying hi here at the great grounds of the Wisconsin State Fair. It's the highlight of the summer, really. It is for me. Hopefully it is for you as well. All right, a couple things going to happen in the next half hour of the upswing with Jeff Sherman. Andy Tarnoff will join us at some point. He's in the mess that is the arrival at the opening bell of the, I'd say that for a reason, because we're talking with Dave Spano in the next half hour as well. The opening bell of the State Fair is always a busy time, a lot of traffic, a lot of congestion. So he's in that mix. He will join us about 10:40. But before we get to that, the one, the only, I have not talked to Dave Spano on the air in a while, a long while. Dave Spano, president and CEO of Annex Wealth Management. He's going to update us on all things markets, right? We are seeing right now latest numbers about down 880 or so. So we're going to certainly dig into that one and see what Dave can tell us about that. And interest rates are part of that question. And the recession question comes back. Low jobs numbers, higher unemployment rate. Dave Spano will sort all of that out for us and get to the nut of the problem. And Dave was right about the 40,000 thing, right? He nailed that one. That was last year, and of course he went over 40,000. Right now we're at 38-something. So still very healthy market. Maybe even talk about some of the politics related to all of this. So lots of fun, lots of excitement, lots of serious conversation on the upswing. Thanks to the great folks at Horicon Bank, as Jeff Sherman said during that break. We've got local news coming up. And then Andy Tarnoff and I are going to talk about some remembrances, one of this day, 12 years since the shooting at the Oak Creek Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, and sort of where things have gone since and where things maybe haven't gone in the right direction. And we're probably talking about gun violence there. So he'll join us about 10:40. Busy half hour as we wind it up to 11. And, of course, that's the Wisconsin Midday News with Jessica and Greg. Oh, it's been a while since I heard this song, at least on my show or a show I'm doing. I'm doing the upswing for Jeff Sherman, who's off today. We'll be back tomorrow. The one, the only CEO of Annex Wealth Management, Dave Spano. Good to talk to you, Dave.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Nice to hear your voice. Even though I hear it every day, nice to talk to you.
Yeah. I wish it wasn't for this kind of news, but as often, I like to go to people that know what they're talking about. And when we see the markets, I don't want to say tanking, but in the red numbers, Dow about down about 850, Nasdaq's down as well. The Nikkei certainly took a big hit, their version of today, yesterday here. What are we seeing here? I know that you're looking at things like interest rates and Fed mm-hmm. policy and spending and jobs numbers. What should we be focusing on today?
Well, this morning we knew we were going to get hit pretty hard because the weekend news, we got together, the investment committee got together yesterday and early this morning. Two things happened. Number one, Japan was opened down 7%. And so that usually means we're going to get a bleed over from that, and that's exactly what happened. And secondarily, of course, the geopolitical risk that we're having in Israel, with there was another attack yesterday, so it looks like that could escalate something that we don't want to see. But Iran has, as earlier as last night and this morning, said to the airline pilots to stay clear. So it sounds like that's going to escalate. And so a combination of this real geopolitical risk on both sides of the pond in Japan and everything that's happened over there with raising interest rates, first time in 17 years, and of course an escalation of the geopolitical risk in Israel. And put that all together, Steve, with what's happening with tech stocks and interest rates and Fed, and this is what you get.
So often then the terms that get thrown around are correction or recession. Where do you think those terms apply to where we're at now?
So by definition, correction is something more than 10%. And generally you talk about a bear market, which is more than a down 20%. In bear markets, and recessions are usually connected. Now, this is a unique set of circumstances for a lot of reasons. Number one is you look at the weight of the Mag 7. The Magnificent 7 are the big tech stocks, and they are a whopping 34% of market valuation. And so when you see a chip pullback, you're going to see the entire market can't come back. And, you know, we have been talking about this, as you well know, for a long time, that said, you know, we're getting the benefit of a, you know, we're up 15% at the middle of the year. A lot of that because of AI and tech stocks. And so when those things correct, it's going to take the whole S&P with it. So you're seeing a correction across those markets, some of these chip stocks down 25-30% down. And, of course, that's going to put pressure on the entire S&P 500. But if you open up the hood and say what's doing well and what's not, it's not as bad as it looks at the moment. The Federal Reserve is going to be the belle of the ball here, because they had said we were going to lower interest rates in September, Steve. That's a long ways off, and you know it would be, I think, pretty freak out time if they have an emergency meeting and do something before September.
That's not something you anticipate. They would probably hold to that meeting date, and then probably, if things continue in this direction, lower interest rates.
Right. And so, you know, every year they go to Jackson Hole and all the economists get together. And of course, Chairman Powell will be there. And there's usually some jawboning, if you will, that happens in Jackson Hole. And so that's what we expect is going to happen here in the next couple of weeks, is they're going to get together in Jackson Hole and talk about some things. And there'll be some news. There's always news that comes out of that. And it's going to be something likely of a 25 to perhaps even a 50 basis point cut in interest rates in September. And if that happens, that will be smoothing to the markets right now. So, but there's a lot of news, of course. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of people talking this morning about the shakeup in the U.S. presidential race, and the fact that, you know, one economic policy versus another are going to have a dramatic effect on how the economy reacts. And I'm trying not to be partisan here, but, you know, there's certainly a different opportunity set for the Democrats than the Republicans. And I think you're seeing a repricing of some of those equities right now. But we have 90 days to go. So a lot can happen in that race.
Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. You and I have had this conversation on other days like this. And it's a great way to kind of refocus and maybe think about how people manage their money. And one of the best ways they can do that, their savings, their investments, and all the things that go into that. Annex Wealth Management is part of that story. And I've learned that lesson over the last few years. And it's not a day to panic. It's a day to understand your risk and assess where you can go next.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, and what we've done, again, we got together yesterday and early this morning, and we look at pullbacks as opportunities. And so we say, if there's something that we really like that had earnings, and by the way, the earnings came out, 80% of the earnings were positive and beat their estimates. And so, you know, there's some companies right now that are, air quotes, on sale right now. And so maybe you don't go all in, but perhaps take maybe a quarter position of what you would like. And that is something that we're looking at right now. Do we have an asset allocation change? What should we do this week when things that we do really like are being pulled down in the market? You know, if you have tech stocks that are going down in the Magnificent Seven, but they're pulling down some good stocks that you liked, you know, before this happened, maybe they're cheaper for a reason.
He is Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management, host of Money Talk, one of the great hosts of Money Talk, the longest running program on all of the things we just talked about. Dave, I missed the conversation. Yeah. Stay in touch.
Let's
have fun
it.
This summer, the rest of your summer. Try to get out to State Fair if you can.
I will, and I'll hope to see you out there. Thanks for having me on.
All right, say hi to Danny Clayton for me. All right, we are broadcasting live from the Bank 5-9 Studios, Wisconsin State Fair. Hopefully, he's on the grounds, Andy Tarnoff. If he's not, well, we'll catch him next time. He is scheduled to join us as we round out the upswing, thanks to Horicon Bank, our great sponsors for this great hour of radio, from State Fair, 620 WTMJ. We are live at the Wisconsin State Fair. You know, I always tell people, it takes time to get in here, and Andy Tarnoff jumps in the hot seats. Let me get your mic. There you go.
Straight out of the gate. Right. I mean,
it's good to see you, my friend.
It's good to see you, too. I can't remember a time that it took an hour and a half to get across Milwaukee.
It's always crazy at the 10 o'clock start time, because it coincides with the end of the rush hour and people want to get to State Fair. And there's this fills up quick, so it's always crazy. But I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad we have a ton of time. No, we have a lot to talk about in a short period of time.
So you and I worked together on the book that I put together on the Sikh Temple shooting, 6 Minutes in August. You were my editor for that project.
I was.
So you got to know the story very well. Certainly it's something that I remember every day. It's 12 years today. August 5th, 2012 was the actual day. state. Something that both weighs on you and sort of brings a greater significance to all the things we talk about. Your thoughts about this day?
Well, first of all, can you believe it was 12 years ago?
No.
I mean, I remember exactly what I was doing when the news broke. And I remember the subsequent days following. That's how you and I met.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed unbelievably tragic at that time, and it was. But now you think about all the mass shootings, now you think about the hate crimes, and I wonder if it just has become a blip in America's consciousness.
People have expressed that to me, and I said at the time, I hope this is the beginning of a more intelligent, informed conversation about gun violence and what we do about these things, and I'm not sure that that's happened.
I think it's gotten worse. I mean,
yeah, probably.
Like by the numbers, obviously it's gotten worse, but I think that the way people just accept it as like, well, here we go again, thoughts and prayers. And, you know, outside this group, how many people remember this?
You know, it's interesting. I don't think that a lot of people do. I can always meet people, and if they're really engaged in hearing my story, I will share some of this with them. Because, you know this. It changed my life.
Absolutely.
I would not be doing this job if I hadn't been that mayor in that position at that time in 2012.
It changed your life in lots of different ways.
Yeah, it's a weird coincidence. But it also brought an understanding of how dangerous the idea of hating someone because they look differently, pray differently, whatever differently. And that's really the essence of this story. Whatever the basis of the hate is, it often drives people to act out in these incredibly irrational, violent ways. And this at the time was one of the worst hate crimes that had played out in a place of worship. That's not even true anymore.
I remember how horrific it felt. And then now that we've had the distance and the time and the number of people who died, the weapons involved, it could have been so much worse, and it has been so much worse.
Albeit for an hour, it would have been horrifically worse, because there was only a few people praying and in the temple at that time. And my friend Kamal Saini, whose mom was shot in the back while she was praying that morning, it could have been 10 times that, given the firepower this individual brought with him.
Well, yeah, so I had to go back and look at this, because it's not something I think about every day. But this Nazi did not have an assault rifle. I mean, it was a pistol,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What if that would have been a bigger gun? You know, the same kind of gun that has been used in so many of these mass shootings.
And I don't want to, you know, talk about this and not remember the great heroism of, like, Lieutenant Brian Murphy.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he should, for all intents and purposes, should have been dead that day.
How many times was he shot?
More than a dozen times. Two bullets still in his body. Shows up to save lives at the temple. The great retired police officer, Sam Lenda, who knocked the shooter down, who eventually the shooter killed himself. That's incredible response from first responders. And I don't want to discount that.
I don't either. I mean, that's selfless, just amazing heroism. The fact that it had to come to that is, I mean, is it a failure when the Secret Service takes out the shooter? You know, everyone says, yes, of course it's a failure. He shouldn't have shot in the first place. On the other hand, they got him. So I don't know.
Andy Tarnoff, my guest. We're going to continue the conversation after the break. You're listening, of course, to 620 WTMJ. We are live in studio with Andy Tarnoff. We were talking about the remembrance of August 5th, 2012, 12 years ago today. I was a young mayor, new mayor, and all of that happened on that glorious Sunday morning, but didn't last long, and we dealt with a horrific mass shooting. Now, we're not going to solve this problem in 4 minutes, but I wanted to at least give you an opportunity, and I'll weigh in as well. When you're talking about the uptick and the common occurrence that is mass shootings in this country, I mean, what do you think we should do? It's a complex problem. We're not going to solve
it. Right. We're not solving that in 4 minutes, but I think it's, you know, the ship has sailed on whether or not we're, you know, banning guns and, you know, eliminating the Second Amendment. That's not going to happen. But I do wonder, because you're a gun guy, right?
I have guns. I hunt. Yep.
Right. You know, what kind of gun crosses the line between an appropriate defense hunting, sporting gun and something that can be used easily for mass shootings? I don't know if I've ever heard of anyone hunting with an AR-15.
I guess some people probably do. I think that's sort of a foolish way to hunt. But I mean, the argument is this, right? The Second Amendment says I can do whatever I want, basically. Although it's not true. You can't take a loaded weapon on a plane. You can't own a military.
I mean, I can't get a grenade,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, so that stuff's off the table. So there always is going to be limits. And in the 90s, there was a limit on some of these types of weapons, commonly called assault weapons.
Yeah.
So I am not opposed to that. as long as we protect the rights of Americans to own guns, that's part of the Constitution.
Sure.
It shouldn't be changed.
But if the point of the Constitution is to be able to defend yourself, to be able to hunt, you know, that's one thing. And then, you know, there are guns that are made for that. I don't see a lot of people defending their homes with these AR-15s. I don't see a lot of people shooting deer with these things. These are designed to shoot a lot of people quickly.
What I don't like about this argument and this conversation is the arrogance of some people who often take a mass shooting as an opportunity to talk about gun rights and not the responsibilities that we all have and share as gun owners. And we forget about that.
Yeah, I think there are like a couple things that we could do. It's like real background checks. I mean, the neo-Nazi who shot up the Sikh temple, that guy had some issues, and he did have a background check, but apparently it wasn't a very good one.
Right.
Because someone like that should not be holding a gun. And you can't just blame it on mental illness. I mean, that's a pretty good straw man argument. I mean, obviously people who have certain kinds of mental illness should not be allowed to buy guns, but that's such a big, complicated issue that it takes away from the main subject of what's going on here.
When you see the proliferation of these types of weapons, I'm talking about the AR style rifles and guns and all of that stuff, where you can kill and shoot a lot of people in a very short amount of time. Sutherland Springs, Tree of Life Synagogue, it wasn't the case in Oak Creek, but other mass shootings. The ability to the Las Vegas shooting,
yeah,
the nighttime concert from the hotel, that those are examples of how this can go wrong quickly, and some real legislation, bipartisan, by the way, is important on this conversation.
I don't even understand who would object to this. I really don't. I mean, because if you're saying that the purpose of having a gun is for sporting purposes, for self-defense purposes, you have a lot of choices. And one of them shouldn't be having basically a civilian machine gun. Just like I can't get a grenade or a rocket launcher. I bet those would be fun. I bet that would be a lot of fun to play around with those. But that is not enough of a reason to be able to have everything be legal.
We'll end it this way. Is there a will among voters in this country to vote for people, install those people in offices that matter, like Congress, that could actually make a change?
I'm
Do you think
sure.
that will is there?
I don't know. I mean, you'd think after a Sandy Hook, yes, but then no. So Americans love guns, and that's why we have so many shootings, and it's just part of the institution. I don't know what it's going to take to change it. Unfortunately, it wasn't that awful event 12 years ago. Do you have any ideas? Because I don't.
I know that it's not another mass shooting, because one after another, including, you mentioned Sandy Hook, one of the most horrific days of my life, recalling that story, you know, a few months after our story, it was hard to comprehend, and it was so maddening that happened to those children, and that accomplished nothing.
I think the only way you can do it is have realistic, honest conversations, right? Even people who don't like guns are not going to say, ban all the guns. They're already here. On the other hand, background checks, better background checks, banning the ghost sales, having certain types of weapons that are illegal, and having a real honest discussion about it without all the politics and all the rhetoric. That's the only way we start.
And I'll wrap it up with this. As much intelligent conversation on the responsibility side of gun ownership as there is on the ownership side. That is an important part of this debate.
Most gun owners are good guys. So let's engage them in the conversation and not the crazies.
Andy Tarnoff, you're part of my August 5th story, so thanks for taking the time to be here.
It's good to see you, Steve.